Are we on? Good afternoon. I'd like to welcome everyone to our discussion session. I would like to point out that although the agenda and the notice was support services conference room, that we are in the TEC. Dr. Adams did request that everyone make sure you have your calendar. She has some things she wants to discuss with you at the end of this.
I want to present the calendar for next year, actually. And
for an hour?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. And we also need to look at dates again for information session. Mm-hmm. And we need to have that as soon as we can. And Dr. Adams and I really feel like it would be best for all of us if we could do that sooner rather than later. Mm-hmm. We're going to go ahead and get started because I know we all have quite a few things that we need to be bringing forward. Ms. Jimenez, Common Core State Standards, or did you want to start with something?
I'm going to go ahead and start with the SHAC. And it's basically I was reviewing our minutes, and we have pending feedback from the superintendent about the letter that we received from the school health advisory.
Thank you. Actually, the information that I have is from the workshop in terms of follow-up on the health curriculum and how to get information on and data. So the first page, I've asked, after the workshop, I had asked Mrs. Bennett. She has been working with some of the teachers that are teaching in the secondary curriculum. And they attended a workshop, and they were going to get together to update the curriculum, but they hadn't done it yet. So what she has done is put together a timeline on the health curriculum for secondary, and I really didn't plan to go over it with you, but to have you get an idea to look at this to see that we do feel like it's time to update the secondary curriculum, the standards that are required. They're going to work with all of the teachers that teach. For those that can't make it, they're going to videotape the sessions that they have. They're going to use CPALMS, which is an online information center that you can get lots of curriculum from. So they're also going to use CPALMS as a resource for the updated standards in health. The teachers are going to meet, update the curriculum, which will be ready to go for next year. So I think that, and along with any of the new standards, I feel like we're going to be up to date. Mrs. Jimenez had pointed out to me that in some of the areas, and I talked with Mrs. Bennett about this as well, particularly when it comes to information, we sometimes have presenters come in and do HIV, STD presentations, and some of the information hasn't always been totally accurate. There is a new person at the health center that she gave me the name, and so I provided that name to Mrs. Bennett and asked her to use that person as a resource as they present information to the students. The health department has in the past agreed to be a resource as a speaker. You know, you could be a speaker, or you could be a resource to the teachers to provide some additional information. So whatever the standards are, that's what we're covering. Mm-hmm. And then this person, along with the person that was used in the past, and we'll work together to...
Thanks. We had a citizen come in and talk to us about her perceived deficiencies, I guess, mm-hmm. in our health education. I spoke to a few people and asked, well, what do you think mm-hmm. about it? And what I heard was that there's an inconsistency of what's delivered. Mm-hmm. That may be why, if there are speakers coming in, it's not always the same speaker. The standards may be interpreted differently by different people who are they volunteers or...
I think it's been a couple of things. I don't even know that that's the inconsistent piece. I think the inconsistent piece has been more in the delivery in the classrooms in terms of the curriculum that's being covered. And so what we would like to do is make sure that we're covering all the standards adequately, okay, and to provide the training and involve those teachers that are doing the teaching and the updates so that they all have a curriculum to follow. Mm-hmm. So I think that the consistency is more in who's delivering it and the information. So I feel like by bringing the teachers together and having them help write curriculum and update it and have something, scope and sequence for them, that it'll be a better delivery model.
Mm-hmm. Other board comments? Oh, you want to follow?
One, sure. Just one other thing. Well, speaking to the students that, you know, mm-hmm. family, friends, they were all pretty clear that they felt like they needed to have a take-home piece because they were unlikely to ask questions in the classroom just because of the embarrassment in them. And I guess not all the classes are single gender. There's some that are single gender and some that are not. And that a take-home piece that had a place to call for questions, which 211 would qualify, I think, for that, was something they felt that they would have liked to have.
Okay. So what I hear you saying is some way 211 would be one example of, but trying to make sure that we have some type of resource that students have available to them to answer questions that they might not be comfortable asking in class.
Okay. Okay, any comments?
Okay, and one more piece that was also part of the workshop is one of the questions was, who's the contact person for the data regarding the screenings and things we do? And so we want to be sure that the board and others know that Linda Young from the health department can share aggregate data, and she is the resource. She is a resource for that data. And a second question was asked about the bullying and crisis situations. And so what Mrs. Dr. Torres Martinez provided me with is some of the updated things that they're doing. And I have a poster to give you, a flyer to give you, that talks about the upcoming session that we are co-sponsoring along with the Sheriff's Department and the Boys and Girls Club regarding bullying. And it's going to be held at the Performing Arts Center. And so I will give you a flyer. This flyer has gone out to schools. It's online on our virtual backpack, but it is another community session that we're having regarding bullying, in which we're helping to sponsor. The date is
16th?
Thursday, January 16th, 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Performing Arts Center at Verbeek High School. So I have a copy of this for you.
Yeah, I just have a couple of follow-up questions. Relative to bullying, do we have any online forms on our website for reporting? I had sent you a link.
Yeah, we do have a form. You gave me examples. That is one of our goals this year, is to get those online forms. But what we do have that we didn't have before is a form at the school site that parents have the opportunity to fill out regarding they've come in and they've reported that there's a bullying issue, and this documents basically that somebody, that a parent came in or somebody came in to register.
Given that we're working towards better documentation, mm-hmm. is there a possibility of, on an annual basis, some kind of a report on what kind of incidents we're getting? Because I know one of the concerns that has been out there, especially when we've engaged the community in conversations about bullying, is that if we talk about how many incidents of bullying have occurred in the school district, and if you look at following the legal definition, maybe there were four. Mm-hmm. I know those numbers are ridiculously low, and they really do not represent the realities in our schools in terms of students not feeling safe or not feeling respected beyond a literal definition in a code of conduct guide or in a state statute. So it would be very helpful to have an idea of
you know, how many incidents are being reported, say, by parents, if they choose to do so, because that gives you an idea of when kids and families are not feeling safe, regardless of how we classify it for the state. Mm-hmm. So is there any consideration given to how that information is going to be used in terms of presenting a picture of what these incidents look like in our schools?
Well, we can. It's up to the board. You have 21 schools, so you would, right now it's a form, you know, that's given out. You know, I'm not opposed to it. I like the idea of having something online where it's easy to gather information. You know, it's easy to get those trends, and it's easier to compile it. So, I think that could be a goal as we get it online to be able to do that. You know, like I said, it's I'm not opposed to the idea. I doubt if there's going to be a lot of documented again as well.
Right.
You know what I mean? I think the best resource that we have are those people that come in, those student support specialists that come in and talk about it, those that are dealing with it, the day-to-day incidents at a school where they hear or they talk with.
And because just theoretically, even if we have comment boxes, you know, we're supposed to have comment boxes in our schools, and it would be interesting to know on a monthly basis how many comments are put in there and how many of them are legitimate, how many of them are followed up on. Because sometimes I've heard from students that, you know, that there's no follow-up. And so if we're going to say we're going to listen to your concerns, there has to be accountability in terms of follow-up. Otherwise, we're wasting people's time and we're creating an impression that we're listening when, in fact, there's no accountability.
Ms. Hinch. Well, we'd have to go back one section before to what Ms. Jimenez said about statistics. I don't know that I really would want to know real specifics about bullying because it's a lot of it's perception. But I think something such as verbal versus physical versus cyber, you know, those type of statistics I would like to know. Is it verbal? Because, you know, that's subjective. You know, if I am in the better reading class and I tell little Johnny, you know, I don't belong in the slow reading class, I should be in the better reading, you know, some schools perceive that as bullying. It's a perception. So as a board, we could really spend a lot of time on that stuff, which I don't really think is for us. I think that's subjective, but I think that it would be a clearer picture to know verbal, physical, cyber, on the bus, or in the school. You know, in an actual school on a bus. I mean, I'd like to see that would interest me.
And just as a follow up, you know, what I'm saying is not that we're going to be involved in it.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is that, as with any of the things that we do in the school district, when we have information, we don't have to know the particulars, the name, the school, the grade level, none of that. But if we have information, then we can make informed decisions around these issues. And if we have a way of documenting some of this and having an idea, oh my God, in 1 month there were only 20 or there were 500, then when we hear conversation in the community and people are telling us, you know, you've got all these issues, this is going on, and we're saying, you know, we're documenting. And really, we had 20 incidents last year, and the school district is on it. That's the kind of information I want. I don't want particulars because I don't think that that's what our job is. But any information that we can get, that we can compile, that will inform our conversation at the level of the school board, and this does come up, and we do have workshops on bullying, I think that kind of information is helpful because what has been recorded for the states obviously makes it seem like it's a non-issue when we know on the ground that it is an issue. And so I'm trying to see, okay, so how can we dig deeper into that? That's all that I'm asking for.
Ms. Disney.
I don't know if you had a chance to talk to Dr. Adams or Mr. Gresta about the background of all this, and that's that there's this rather expansive state statute about bullying that's got a narrow definition, and so we collect that information. But one of the conversations that we've been having is that definition, you know, is there, but there's other things that happen that look like bullying and sound like bullying, mm-hmm. but they don't meet the definition.
Right.
So we're trying to capture that information because parents are calling that bullying, but our data doesn't reflect mm-hmm. what our parents are telling us.
So what direction would we give the superintendent for collecting this then?
That's what we're trying to figure
yeah.
out.
Well, that's why I was trying to give categories.
Yeah. And it is all very subjective in terms of trying to determine. So, and trying to gather it from a bus referral or you're talking about many different sources, so it's pretty... I'm trying to think how you would do it. So I think what I need to do is talk to staff about it. What is a way that we could gather some information? Even on the cyberbullying, I think cyberbullying probably happens a lot that we don't even know about in terms of being able to gather information on, you know, when it happens. But I'm willing to look at and talk with staff about what are some ways that we could pull some of this information from lots of different places together.
And getting back to the categories, as you know, we just bought those cameras for the buses. So if it was on the bus, then as you said, Ms. Jimenez, when we go out into the community, then the combat or the answer would be, well, yes, we are, and we have found out these statistics, and we have also purchased, you know, one thing I can tell you, in a positive and proactive to help combat mm-hmm. these incidences,
right.
We now have these cameras on the buses. So that's some of the things, and I understand because we are the front line in the community when they have these questions. And so this way, that would be part, and that would be, as I said, a good tool for us. And then, obviously, a nice answer.
I'm going to do Chairman's privilege here. I have a question for Dr. Adams. Dr. Adams, since we're talking about cameras, not all schools, but some of our schools have cameras in the halls
mm-hmm.
also.
Mm-hmm.
Are those reviewed in any way for incidents, or is it only when there is an incident reported that it is reviewed?
Usually, the resource officer and maybe one other person has a camera going all the time.
Okay.
So when they're at their desk, they may see it.
That is visible.
Yes, there are.
Taking the time to.
Well,
and we don't want somebody sitting there all day.
No.
We're not going to pay somebody to do that.
That's right.
But
they are available, particularly if there's an incident, and okay. you can go back and retrieve
Thank
it.
Thank you for letting me do that, Ms. Disney. Please continue.
There's so much information out there right now. This commercial sector's taking hold of this bullying mm-hmm. thing, and they're selling things. There's a mm-hmm. campaign out there right now on either radio or television about it takes 10 seconds to stop bullying, and they're mm-hmm. encouraging children to speak up. So many different approaches mm-hmm. to it that I would rather wait and see what your think tank comes up with mm-hmm. and reports back to us, and then if we have any... feel like we need additional data from what their approach is, then maybe
and
we
actually
go back.
It was this group I would go to say, how can we gather information from a variety of sources to get a better picture? Because you know, there's the definition of bullying, and then there's all this other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so how can we give ourselves a picture of what's happening out there, and you know, looking at verbal, physical, you know, whatever, cyber. But let me take it back to that group. That was my question.
This other stuff is very real to our children.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It does not meet the narrow definition.
Right.
We do need some direction on a comment. I've heard a couple of yes, that's a good idea to place these forms online. That's not something that I think necessarily needs to be vetted through a committee. But
well, one of my goals, you know, we've talked about is trying to get more online information, and so it's kind of a written goal. It doesn't say about this, but this will be one of them,
this
is to have,
okay.
Actually, I've been given a couple of areas that I've, school districts that I've shared with Mr. Green.
Okay.
Examples of how you can put forms and information online that the community or anybody else can respond to and get information.
Well, I'm actually hearing three supportive, so I think you have full support. I mean, you have at least the corporate support. I had one comment going back to the health curriculum plan timeline.
Mm-hmm.
My comment was, as that committee moves forward, I think it's very important in the training offered to teachers and in the committee itself, that we share with them the legislative requirements for what is required, you know, as it relates to the SHAC committee and what they do and how it, mm-hmm. you know, how it transfers to what we're doing.
Yeah. They are going to be primarily focusing on the standards. Okay, what the state requires us to teach. This is what the curriculum and instruction department, and that's who's going to be working on it, is the teachers and curriculum and instruction. And so what we'll do is inform, what we can do is inform the community, the committee members of, the SHAC committee members right. of what the curriculum looks like and how it's been updated.
Because they, I know they did spend a tremendous amount of time mm-hmm. looking at the curriculum and addressing some of the issues and their, you know, interpretation of that, but I think that this is a good opportunity for us to just take something that's much more definitive. I'm not saying we need to say how many minutes each thing has to be. We don't want to do that, but we certainly need to know that the areas that are required are covered, and not just required legislatively, but the information we should be providing to our students.
I just have a follow-up also on the HELP curriculum timeline. Is there going to be health department involvement in terms of putting together, you know, how you're saying that the curriculum is going to be revisited and revised, mm-hmm. and are there going to be health professionals that will also be providing some insight in terms of accuracy of information and whatnot?
I've provided Mrs. Bennett with the name that you gave me. I leave it to them to, you know, provide together anybody that they feel can help benefit them to review the state standards and do it. So.
And then as a final, once this process, I see you have it through August,
mm-hmm.
will we have a summary report of what the outcome was? Not that I want the curriculum and everything,
yeah.
but just a summary of how that went
sure.
and what kind of training is offered,
okay.
you know, any costs associated with it, things like that, because I know one of the challenges with this curriculum is the lack of training and the discomfort that teachers have around some of these topics.
Miss Disney and I have been together too long. We both looked at each other, and she shook her head. Yes, I know she's got my question covered. Go ahead, Ms.
I would love to see the curriculum because
me too.
If you ask five different people, you hear five different things, and I want to be able to have an informed answer when parents ask me what it is we cover. Was that it?
Yeah, that was it. Spot on. That was it. Well, and I say that only because we don't need to know everything that's being taught in the classroom, but that's why I said we need to make certain that there is a better understanding of expectations. And I think if we see what the expectations are, we can speak intelligently about what those expectations are. So I hear Ms. Disney and myself. Is there anybody else who feels that, you know, yes, they'd like to at least have the opportunity?
I also support that.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Thank you, Ms. Disney. Okay. Mr. McCain.
No, anything.
Ms. Disney.
Well, I just have a FYI that I thought was really interesting. There was the, was it in Colorado, the Supreme Court ruled in favor of the student who, regarding textbooks in college and the cost of textbooks.
No, what was that about?
That it was a lawsuit about the price of textbooks because it was basically, is it antitrust? Is that what they call it?
Yes.
And so it was driving up the price of textbooks for students, and the Supreme Court ruled in favor of the student. So we should be seeing lower prices on textbooks this year. And so I wanted that information in your ear for when you're negotiating with the college. You know, we can volunteer to pay for the books as it comes forward.
Yeah.
You know.
We do pay
cheaper.
For the textbooks,
yeah,
so, you know, it would be nice to have
it
cheaper. That's right.
So
it's
I just
a
thought
huge
that was really
cost.
Interesting. It was a
huge
and it's
cost.
An international. It's an international lawsuit.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'll pass that on.
Chairman Johnson. Chairman Johnson. I know you're thrilled, aren't you? I think I'll start with the first thing, and Mr. McCain will love this. We're going to talk about protocols.
Okay. Oh boy.
This is going to be all encompassing. I did notify Ms. Simchick that that she has a command performance on it for the MLK parade, and I did ask Ms. Stang to make certain she has a shirt available and a couple of other things. So that being said, the 20th, Monday the 20th,
January 20th.
I'm literally driving in with dressed for the parade, so you better be here. Monday the 20th.
Now, what time is it? It's in the morning.
10 a.m.
Yeah. What?
10.
And we are behind the sheriff's office, and we are at the very beginning of the parade, so we are done.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how do you, taxi over that way?
We work that out. Usually there's one or two cars.
Okay. We taxi each other back.
Last year, I think I picked up Dr. Adams I picked up somebody at the park and then brought them. And
then I took my car back.
She shuttled people back when it was...
And they had tape on their mouths. They had what? Tape on your mouth so you couldn't talk.
Gosh, for me, I thought it was an insult.
One year, didn't Miss Mackay park at the park and walk back to the beginning of the site and then walk back?
I can see her doing that. So she probably ran. She jogged.
And I have a check. If I'm there, I'm going to have at least one midget in tow.
Yeah,
maybe two.
Yeah.
So, but we probably just park at the beginning right there
and we'll
catch a ride with one of you.
Yeah.
That's just the easiest way.
So you're seeing Rick and Bernetti?
Oh, yeah.
Actually, Eddie and Eddie's coming then. If you're
three clowns and a donkey, I don't
know. Mom and dad.
Yeah. Or no pet koala bear.
And I push John in the stroller.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a family day.
Yeah, it is.
No, I've walked it before with the sheriff's department.
But
you know, we didn't bring our kids, but this would be great.
And I'd like to bring up something else. I did apologize to Dr. Adams. I made some New Year's resolutions for myself. My accountability is I've shared them with a couple of people, and one is I'm going to try not to talk over people. But the other is that we do need to talk a little bit about process, and there have been a couple of times at workshops where I have apologized to Dr. Adams because I've asked a member of staff rather than asking her. And I know we're getting a little bit loose at some of our board meetings about us asking members of staff for information. Everything we do goes through the superintendent. And if it is something she wants to answer, fine. If it is something she wants to pass on to another member of staff, fine. I may think that Mr. Morrison needs to answer a question when actually someone else, Mr. Green, maybe can answer that answer a question. I'm just something off the top of my head. So I'm just, you know, it's a beginning of the year. It's time for us to just talk a little bit about this. But even if somebody is standing at the podium, we need to always make certain that we address our questions through Dr. Adams. And that is only respectful. And we need to remember we set the example, whether it's wearing our tags or it is how we address Dr. Adams in a public meeting, which should always be Dr. Adams, not Fran. How we address members of our staff, and I know it. I'm glad that we have a nice team feeling, especially at discussion sessions, and that's fine, or at workshops. But the public sees us and perceives us. If we're too much of a goody-goody, palsy kind of an attitude, it sends the wrong message. It isn't fair to us as elected officials. It's also not fair to our staff. And I think we need to be reminded of that. So, I'm not pointing any fingers except to myself, but it's something I think we need to be a little bit aware of. Was that a good protocol, Mr. McCain? I know you love protocols.
Sure.
Yeah, I remember one time asking a member of staff a question, and that staff member had been on vacation. So myself and the staff member. So yeah.
And it happens. It does happen. Okay. And so we're back to Ms. Jimenez.
Okay. Before I go on to the next one, I just wanted to follow up in this document. Can you clarify what transition plans we're talking about under guidance?
The guidance has a this year guidance has to rewrite the guidance plan. Okay, to the state. And so what Dr. Torres Martinez is working with a group of guidance counselors who will be, is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Guidance transition plan?
Yeah.
Yeah. What the state calls it is a transition plan. But they have to do a complete review of the guidance services they have, and there are certain criteria and protocols that they have to work on, and I'm sure that'll probably come before the board.
Mm-hmm.
But she's going to be working at that second semester with the guidance counselors.
Okay.
All
right.
So what is your second?
All right. My second Common Core State Standards. And I actually, there's an attachment with this. At one of the workshops that we attended at Florida School Boards Association, there were representatives from the state of Kentucky who have been implementing the Common Core State Standards, talking a little bit about their experience. And this is a document that they shared for school boards. And I thought that it would be a helpful guiding document for us as we are more aware of the implementation of Common Core State Standards, the implication for students and the implication for the school district. There are some really good questions here, and I don't know, I just like invite you to look it over and so that we can have a conversation maybe at the information session in terms of how we would like to go forward in terms of accountability around Common Core State Standards and what our expectations are as a board in terms of what we expect the superintendent to provide us so that we know what's going on with the implementation, the teacher preparation, the resources, the expense, the impact on students. And I think all of these are very good questions. So I wanted to put it out there so that we can actually, when people have time to look at this, have a follow-up conversation as to if there's any interest by the board corporate in moving forward with some of these questions and setting up a timeline for when we'd like to have answers.
Dr. Adams, I didn't see any pencils up, so I'm going to ask Dr. Adams. Dr. Adams, is this something you think needs a workshop? Is it something we can do? What are your thoughts on getting on vetting this? I like the questions. I think that as I sit here as a board member looking at them, I don't know the answers to these questions. And I'm not sure you do at this point.
Can I make a clarification?
Sure.
This is not like a test question. This is actually, I think that this is something that the board will decide. This is our prerogative as a board to give the direction to the superintendent in terms of what kind of information we need. And these are sample questions. And I don't think, I respectfully disagree with Ms. Johnson, this is not up to the superintendent to tell the board, yes, you may or you may not ask those questions. Those questions don't have an answer.
I'm sorry.
What, you know, so it's really
that's
our prerogative.
I mean.
That's the way I heard
yeah,
it. So
and
maybe
I apologize.
That's why we're having a discussion.
I
was
talk
and you're not one of the people I gave any of my
just
Missy Menace, I'm very sorry.
That's okay.
I'm trying so hard.
So, you know, these questions don't have an answer because we haven't moved forward with them. But
well,
I think it is our prerogative to decide if we want to have these kinds of questions presented to our superintendent for feedback. So that's my comment.
Thank you.
You're never
going to
make it.
I am.
He found his calling now.
January 15th.
Nobody likes you.
I know.
In explanation, what I meant was, and I was much too flippant, I apologize for that. What I meant was, I'm not too sure that Dr. Adams has information that she can give us regarding any of these, and I do apologize for that. I think as we look at these, at the things that we do want, we absolutely need to set the direction,
right,
not the superintendent. And I didn't mean for that to be, that wasn't one of my resolutions, but I'll try and be better about that too. But Ms. Disney.
Well,
What I see when I see this is that it is a guide for us to, it's kind of thought-provoking, really, mm-hmm. so that as we, for instance, get a report back from you about what's happening in professional development as a whole, perhaps some of these mm-hmm. questions will arise there as we're preparing your next evaluation, mm-hmm. some of these questions as mm-hmm. we're talking about in our information session about some other things, you know, these will creep into a lot of different areas of our work, but it's just thought-provoking for mm-hmm. us to keep these in mind as mm-hmm. we take our new approach, our student-centered mm-hmm. Focused mm-hmm. approach.
Dr. Adams?
I think that the Common Core right now is kind of overarching many of the things that we're doing. So I think to have that discussion as we go along with, you know, questions like that is certainly appropriate. But I think that the work that we're trying to do and the goals that you've set for me are in line with, you know, here. But I still think that the discussion and the ongoing discussion and the thought-provoking questions are good. I certainly would agree that that is... We had a conversation earlier about Common Core, and the Common Core standards, I think, are here. I think that the concern that we all have right now is the implementation and the assessment part of the Common Core. But in the meantime, it's going to be very important that our teachers have the professional development that they need, the leaders have the support that they need, that the community is informed as much as we can as with regard to principals or in schools and making parents aware of how education is going to change in the classroom. So I think all these parts are ongoing, and I don't see a problem with having that ongoing discussion.
Any other comments?
Yeah.
Yes,
Ms. Yeah, I mean, I think there are specifically two questions here that we can be discussing, and one of them is under create the public will to succeed. What is our responsibility to positively communicate the new standards and their impact to the public? We have an information session for the public mm-hmm. that we've talked about but hasn't materialized. And even though I know that at the local level, I know principals are trying to educate parents, we rely on the trust and the goodwill of our taxpayers to support the work we do. And so I think it's important for us to not just focus on parents, who are our main clients and our students, but to also make sure that we have communication with the community. And that's something that very concrete that we can do and that could move forward. Another item is the very last question, how will we be adequately informed about the new standards? I mean, I think that there's work that can be done there in terms of us as school board members having a little bit more information in terms of specifically what some of these changes are. And I've talked to Dr. Adams about this before, even to the extent of some part of a workshop or a roundtable where we can do a comparison, where we could look at one strand in the current curriculum and the change that Common Core State Standard brings to that particular strand. It can be at a very simple level in math and in reading, so that we actually have an understanding of what this means for students and what this means for teachers. So I think that there is work to be done. There are a lot of unknowns, but we can plan. You know, when, as this is implemented, how do we want to see that data? How are we going to share it with the community? What's that going to look like? We can have those conversations proactively and not wait until everything is upon us and say, oh, how are we going to handle this? So I think some of this is very philosophical in some ways, you know, what do we expect and so on and so forth, but there are some concrete pieces. And I think that's work that we do as a board. We figure out, okay, what kind of information do we want? What do we want to do to communicate to the community? And we do that in partnership with our superintendent. But I think that's an initiative that we take. These are guiding questions for school boards. And I'm sure that there's probably an equivalent, you know, guiding questions for superintendents, for teachers, because this impacts all of us at different levels. And I'm just asking us to look at it from our perspective.
Yes, Ms. Dugan.
I owe Dr. Adams an answer to a question. from over the holidays about Kim McDougall. And I spoke with her in December in Tampa, and then I've had another conversation with her since then. And basically, when we first approached her about coming here, that was during the time of the transition from Pam Stewart going from interim mm-hmm. to being appointed superintendent, mm-hmm. and also there were some other changes happening up there with the Board of Education, you know, some changes in people as well as in direction. So the governor had asked, Kim McDougall is his chief of education staff, had asked her to hold off until some of that dust settled mm-hmm. so that she came in with new, you know, fresh information, current information. So she said, I think, did the superintendents, were they told that it would roll out in February? The testing direction that we're going in testing?
Well, actually, just yesterday, okay. the commissioner announced that the Department of Education could be ready next year with okay. the assessment, which was okay. brand new information to all of us, and we have a conference call tomorrow morning about okay. it.
So that was information that she wanted to have made public to superintendents and school boards before she mm-hmm. came and stood in an audience, and you heard, she didn't want you to hear it the first mm-hmm. us to hear it the first time in that setting. So now that that's out, she'll, mm-hmm. she's willing to start looking at okay. the calendar and schedule.
So as we go further, excuse me, is that okay? As we go further too into the legislative session, I mean, now we have this part that the DOE has come out and said, well, we think we're going to be ready next year. But then we've got superintendents associations, school board associations, and our public saying we need a transition period. We haven't piloted anything. We haven't tested anything. We're really hoping that there's going to be some time, and I think that is another big concern of our public is about the testing piece and the assessment piece. So I was pretty shocked myself when that came out yesterday. I wasn't anticipating that because we have a lot of forces that are working against that right now.
Did you get the plane analogy? The plane?
No, I didn't.
Okay, you got that plane analogy. So the plane analogy is they feel like circling in the air is implementation of Common Core and all the professional development and the design of the test and the timeline for the test and all that. That's all the plane circling. And that if you were to delay it, that's the equivalent of a plane falling out of the sky. And so that was why they were unwilling to delay it. But they're willing to entertain ideas of not counting the scores, but to test, not to stop or delay the test. So they're talking about other ways of how they're going to use the data that they collect from the test, but they are not interested in having the conversation of delaying. That's what I
said. Okay. I probably will hear that tomorrow morning. And one of the other things, and we did have a little bit of discussion about this happening across the United States now, is how to use that information. And the argument of, while we have common standards throughout the United States now, then we're going to have all different cut scores at every state, so you're kind of back to, oh, where's the, you know what I mean? So it's...
You also don't have all the states participating, so...
Right.
The premise that this is a national initiative to be able to compare apples to apples is gone, too.
Okay, and I did... so does that mean, then, that we are going to be looking for a date to have a town hall and information to the community?
Yes, however... The other piece that came up was were you at the work session with Pam Stewart
and
her five chiefs, technology, testing. What's Kathy Hebda's title?
Yeah. She has a new title. I don't know what it is.
She's got five deputies. And Pam Stewart were all in this workshop, and they were talking to us about what's happening and what, you know, where things are going. And so I said, would you be willing to take this show on the road? Would you be willing to come to our area and talk to our parents and our staff and who wants to hear? Because public education has taken such a beating that I feel like if you were here, you could help shore up support for public education because people would maybe have some confidence that you actually know. I wanted to say know what you're doing, but I actually what I said was so that you know where we're going. Because that all those changes that have been happening in public mm-hmm. education have made people feel like they don't know really what mm-hmm. direction we're going in. So they said yes, that they mm-hmm. would do that. So
well, I think
we
that
might
be great
open,
that
we might rethink how we're doing this and maybe try to make it all of that together, because then maybe we could actually draw an audience worthy of all mm-hmm. this transportation costs and everything that they're going to incur. So
okay.
That would be a good information session conversation.
Yeah.
Okay. So
okay. That'll be good.
Okay. And then before we move on, is there any interest on the part of the board to get some more information about what we talk about when we say the Common Core State Standards? Because I've had many people say to me, well, have you actually read them? Do you know what they're about? I haven't read them. But I would like to have a better understanding of what the implications are. And as I said earlier, I would appreciate some way of comparing what we've been using and what these new Common Core State Standards are, so we actually know what we're talking about. And if it's being implemented, I know that it's being implemented in K through third, so at least we could use an example from something that's already being done in our classroom so that we know what this is about. Because I do think that for myself, I can't speak for anyone else, I know that I've looked at them and I really have no basis for comparison. I can look at all the examples and everything they give, and I can't answer the question, well, how is this different than what we've been doing, and how is it impacting individual students and teachers? And I think that that's the kind of information that we should have as board members, because this is really changing the way we do education in our school districts. But as one board member, I cannot request that information. We can only do it if we give direction as a board, if anybody else might be interested in hearing that kind of information.
Yes, Dr.
Last year, when curriculum and instruction did their workshop, that was one of the big pieces that they did. You know, we're now another year into it. The Common Core standards are like that deep. But there are, if the board would like to have, you know, an update on looking at some examples and so on and so forth, I'm sure curriculum and instruction would be willing to accommodate in a workshop setting. We have a January 21st workshop with them on student, the progression plan, you know, and the updates to that. So if the board's willing to wait until after that, and you want to do that, you know, it's up to you. We're certainly glad to accommodate that.
I really don't want to have a workshop just on Common Core. I think that is counterproductive to what we're trying to do, is say they are the standards, they've been adopted, they're in place, you know, it's gone forward. This is not up to us to put a hold on it, which is, I'm afraid, the advertisement of a workshop about Common Core standards will draw that kind of, you know, crowd in. But mm-hmm. I think that any workshop we're having about curriculum instruction could go over those types of comparisons for you.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't need to see all the standards, but just
yeah.
to understand how the depth mm-hmm. versus breadth conversation and
Kay.
The changes in Florida, because a lot of the examples we're getting here on the
mm-hmm.
dais
mm-hmm.
are not about Florida. You know, Massachusetts had higher math standards, and that's where that whole conversation came about. We've lowered standards, but Florida hasn't lowered standards for math. So I think if we just have the Florida examples.
Yeah. I have another idea. You know, the principals have taken up the leadership of doing something for parents. Okay, and they're going to have sessions. I mean, I think they're planning to have it at Dodgertown. But that might be something that the board members would want to attend, because what they're going to be doing is they're going to be talking about STEM. They're going to be talking about writing. They're going to be talking about how the Common Core impacts the curriculum and what students are learning. So maybe that's a kind of a starting place for us, is to be able to do that.
Are
so when
the
I
parents are hearing.
Yeah. So if that's okay, we'll
mm-hmm.
all right. And I'll let you know when that's going to be. And
thank you very much, Dr. Adams. Mr. McCain.
Yes, it is.
Why didn't I write it down? Can you just get me for a second?
Okay, Ms. Simchick.
I think... go ahead.
Go ahead.
She's sure?
Fine. Yeah.
Okay. Mrs. Johnson and I had a hallway conversation about the old Chairman's Corner. Was that what it's called? Chairman's Corner? It was a television show that the chairman did, mm-hmm. and it was broadcast on Channel 28. And she did it, and I did it, and it hasn't been done for a while.
Then I became chairman. I said, no. I got enough on my plate.
So I thought, wouldn't it be great if we could revive that and and cover some of these community interest issues that we've been talking about, things that we want to do a better job informing the public about. I did a radio show just the other day with Mark Schumann, and it was tough. It was an hour.
Wow.
He sat there and talked to me. It was a long time. And it was focused on reading scores. That would cut even tougher. Did you hear it?
No, I didn't, but you told me you were doing it.
Yeah. So, but, you know, it made me get on the stick and mm-hmm. and understand the issue better. And it'll do the same for all of us. And I would love to see us revive that. Now, as campaign season comes around, they're not going to be able to put me on the air unless they put my opponent on the air. So, mm-hmm. you know, those of you who are not running would need to do it.
But you can be on the air prior to filing in the middle of July. Nobody has to give anyone else any equal time. I'm sitting here looking at the attorney. Until everyone files. Prior to that, you do not have to give equal time.
I don't have an opponent yet, so it's not a problem now.
And you would not be using the time with regard to your re-election campaign.
No.
So it's not a political advertisement issue at this point.
Right.
We need to get closer and then to...
I just thought I'd stick that in there. I just thought it was only fair to say.
I gave it until January 15th. I should have said 2 o'clock. I overestimated it.
But it is such a great venue for us to cover some of these community interest things as the radio and the Channel 28 show.
It's also an opportunity to do an expansion of what we do on Bob Seuss's show. And... the good thing is that if it is available, and we can say we have covered that. We have actually. You can go online. We have a whole show that we did, and it was broadcast. And that particular issue was one of the ones, and the direction of the board was discussed at that time. And it is up to each individual chairman. I didn't mean to fault you there, Matt, but. You know, every chairman is going to decide what and how they want information to get out. And there are certain things that are, of course, responsibilities of the chair that they take on when they accept that position. But if they don't want to do Bob's show, if they don't want to do that TV show, but you're right, it did get a lot of play, but it also got a lot of response. Also got a lot of response from our staff. And it was nice to hear some of those comments. I'm sure you also, when you did it, it was nice to hear those comments. And I think we didn't do one in December, and I think there were a couple of months that we did not do shows in. But we did one a month, mm-hmm. and it was good. It was very good. And Mark, I had encouraged Mark. I did one of his. I either did his first or his second. Peter O'Brien did his first, and I think I was his second, or maybe his third, for recording his show. And I encouraged him to not just get the chairman of the municipalities and the school board, but to get all board members, to get all commissioners. I said everybody has something they want to offer. But it was the beginning of it was right after chairman elections and that kind of thing. So it was Peter, and I think I was second. But it's nice to do it, as I said, an expanded version of what you try and do weekly on Bob's show. So if we could check and see what's available, Dr. Adams.
Sure.
We don't have a third person. Does anyone else feel that's important for the chairman or a representative of the board to continue to be doing?
I know it's going to be available. I think it's more of setting a time. When is going to be the convenient time for the board to do that and have a regular spot?
Have a regular spot available.
So I think if you discuss when you'd like to do it, why we have that spot.
Why are they being gone?
No. Chris Heiser will be ongoing, and they're getting ready to recommend another person.
Yes. So will that be streamed, or will we get hook that up with the county PSA? Because that's where I'd really like to see it.
Which one?
The county PSA?
Like how long is it in duration? You know, is it a half-hour show? Is it
it's on the local channel.
No.
We're talking about a couple different things. The Chairman's Corner can be whatever we want it to be because we film it. And we release it. So it can be short, long. It
can replay.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
The Mark Schumann's radio show is pre-recorded.
Oh, I was on it.
Okay.
So that's a half hour.
Yeah. And then so, but the Chairman's Corner, the video, is an opportunity to showcase different things, you know?
Yeah. Whatever the chairman feels they want to.
Yeah.
And that's a nice thing to have.
So I would say it's not usually streaming live. You usually record it, then it's played at different times.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Yeah.
We did not answer your question.
Yeah.
It is not.
Yes.
Not that it isn't usually. Yeah. It is not.
Yeah.
Stream live, but it is recorded and replayed.
Mm-hmm. I think it's people want to do that. I think that's
so. If you have discussion about when and was it a half hour or 15 minutes? Because a half hour can be a long time.
It
depends.
Half an hour. Yeah. There were two segments.
I did it too. There were two segments. There was a break.
Okay.
So,
2 15-minute segments.
You had me on there one time.
Yeah, I did.
I don't know what we talked about.
So, is it the chairman, or is it...
It is the chairman, and the chair... And Karen and I both did the same thing, I think, if I remember correctly. We had board members on with us, but it wasn't advertised, it was recorded, it was all of that. But we would talk about if you're interested in bullying, you know, and those kinds of things, if you had something to offer. But it could be anybody in the district. If the chairman decided... They wanted Mr. Green to talk about something. Mm-hmm. They can have Mr. Green come on with them. If they wanted to have the superintendent, I had Dr. LaCava on when I did it.
So this is something you want to take on, then, you're saying?
I think it's a good opportunity. I not necessarily for the community, but for our school community. That's the feedback I got. Was I got more from our school community in comments. I didn't know so-and-so, or, you know, you don't want to be a Marsha Littlejohn, but you do want to, you want to have, you know, something that, and not saying she doesn't, but you want something that definitely has substance and a focus, and that's what that's what you need to have. Mm-hmm. So whether it is, whether it is recognition of one of our athletic teams, no matter what, I didn't tease McCain about the Noles last night. But whatever it happens to be, that's what you want to that's what you want to focus on. And it's the chairman's call. It was a nice thing, but you wanted to have some relevance. But I found the preponderance of my responses, of anybody commenting, they were from our staff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I won't say it humanizes us, but it does give us the opportunity. It does. Yeah. It gives us the opportunity to sound much less pretense of RFA being authoritative.
And I think 2 15-minute segments once a month is kind of a nice variety because you can have a couple of things that you talk about, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yep. So, well, the chairman could have just decided and done it. I just brought it up. So we could support the chairman to do it and also... we may be called on to do it for some of them. So.
And this was not my idea.
Yeah.
I don't want you to think that...
No. I think that's right. You represent...
Yeah.
Us parents.
I mean, I think it's a good idea.
Thank you. If you're willing to take that up.
And as I said, future... I mean, it's not part of the job description.
So I will find out for sure who we contact about the time. Right now I think it'll be Chris Heiser to work with in terms of a time to record, and then it can be played, you know, at our discretion. So, okay.
Dale, Ms. Simchick, do you have anything else?
Yes. I'm a little confused about the order here in which you're conducting the meeting.
Okay. What did I do wrong?
Nothing. Am I, when you're going around like this, am I commenting on Ms. Jimenez's?
You could bring out, no, you bring
out. Okay,
because
we keep going around the circle.
Well,
all right, you just do it. Okay.
If you have something and you want to bring it up, anybody who wants to comment can.
Okay, no, I just wanted to reflect on some of the things, and I thought Ms. Disney had great points about this. With the, this is a great guiding questions, but it's inclusive. I agree with both of you. It's great guiding questions for Common Core, but a lot of this, these questions as a board, I think, comes up with just moving forward and progressing with curriculum,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's a great place for it. But as somebody going out before the board and even now on the board, I do get that if you go down to create the public will to succeed, mm-hmm. number one is the most important. And I don't want to say line of defense, but that's my biggest issue in the areas that I walk. It's they're very frightened of Common Core, and I would like to be able to positively communicate the new standards mm-hmm. In a positive way. I don't think. I would disagree on comparing this. I mean, comparing the strands to me, I would agree with you that I'd rather, instead of comparing, I'd rather just focusing on the positiveness of what we can find in Common Core. And I also feel that I would need those that information, even though these are, I agree with you, we as a board have to set our questions, our standards, and our accountability. But I think that Dr. Adams can bring back, if we could, you know, even as quickly as the next meeting or a month from now, revisit this section just alone, I would be able to have better input to say, you know, Dr. Adams, you know, I need, you know, or board, this is what I'm finding and this is what I need. Because we do go out there and we get I'd like to be able to talk intelligently, and that's the most, you know, as a board rep. So I think that that's the part I need the help the most with, is to be able to, since it is a mandate, since it is adopted, and since we are moving forward, and there's so many things, as you said, going on. We have an election in August for a governor. I don't know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that much is going to happen, or we could have just be thrown for a loop. But I do want to be able to act as if that we're moving forward and everything's fine with Common Core moving into place, and I want to be able to talk intelligently about it. So if we could...
Are you talking about some talking points?
Talking points, and being able to... between us in this... in our board workshop here, you know, have some discussion on this from the superintendent reflections, so that when, even though we're as a board here, we go off and we're alone, it's you know, subject to a little bit of interpretation of what we each heard here. But I would like to be able to I think maybe what you, if I'm, and I want to make sure I'm understanding you, that we're sort of, that we're unified in that discussion, not you know, verbatim, but being able to project that positive communication. And I don't know that I have enough information to do that, mm-hmm. I'll be honest. Because I looked, and it's that thick, and I'm trying to find it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I again, these are guiding questions for school boards. And, you know, one of the things about this, even speaking positively, I think that we have to be realistic in accepting that there are questions about the Common Core state standards, and there are concerns. And my biggest concern for us as school board members is just solely relying on somebody else's talking points. The DOE gives us talking points. FSBA gives us talking points. The school district gives us talking points. We also have to go a step further and really educate ourselves about some of these issues, because we get talking points from people that have a very specific perspective and agenda. And, you know, unfortunately, when you look at what has happened with this conversation, and when you look at what the Tea Party has been saying, they make some very valid points. But unfortunately, it has become so politicized. And when they talk about it, they talk about socialism and communism and all of this other stuff where people completely shut off and say, no, that's crazy. But if they were able to focus on education and on the real issues, they have some valid points. And I think as school board members, we need to be realistic in terms of the reality of Common Core. The history of Common Core and how it was implemented leaves a lot to be desired. There were a lot of mistakes that were made, and we don't do ourselves a favor when we just, you know, repeat, this is great, this is great. This is great at a certain level, but the process has been faulty, and a lot of people have lost credibility along the way, and we can't allow ourselves to just fall into that bandwagon of we just repeat what we're being told. Because even when we look at when we accepted the race to the top money and we embraced BAM, we didn't even understand it at the time, but we knew we had no choice. We knew that this was coming, so we chose to take the race to the top money, because if we didn't, we would still have to do it without those dollars. And that was the reality. And so when they say that the government kind of forced us, they kind of did. Doesn't make it right, wrong, and different. Doesn't mean that I'm against it. But I do feel that there has to be a responsibility on our part of acknowledging that mistakes were made with a good end result in the process. But mistakes were made, and that's why people are upset.
And so I guess that's why I pulled that out of there. I know you were advocating in this particular, as a board we should come up with a policy, but as I'm saying, as an educator and as our superintendent, I have no problem asking Dr. Adams just for that, number one, so I can walk forward. I agree that there's a lot of talking points, but we have to, for me, I have to put that aside, and I need information quick. To be able to, for the very next person that comes up to me, so to speak, and the person that can get, I feel comfortable in number one on create the public will to succeed, that not based on emotion, but based on factual and implementation, and what some of the, whether it's the critical thinking, the STEM, I have experience with the STEM class, I have personal experience, so I wouldn't want to go around just tout my personal experience of how positive Common Core is. So, or the aspects of Common Core that I've seen, and it's a small amount for my child, but I would, that I could trust saying, Dr. Adams, and I don't know if the board would indulge me with that, Dr. Adams, can you come back with some of the, you know, factual, not ocean based, right, wrong, how do we get here, but this is, does that sound logical? Does that sound okay?
Just let me give a point of clarity, if we could. I think the board has already said we want to address this in our information session. We're going to schedule an information session, which is very different than this discussion session. It's very, minutes are taken, but it is a very different venue than what we have right now for what our workshop is. This, and I think the board's direction was to do it in an information session. The information session is where we would set what we feel, whether it's to take, you know, some of these, all of these, to incorporate some, what we want to be able to get out of this. We'll take a session much longer than what we have right now. That will be done at our information session, which will be, we'll talk about that, setting that date later. We had talked about at one point trying to do it this morning. Timeline just was not going to work for us. So, and unfortunately some of that got away from us and got out, and it was never a set date because we didn't have enough information on a couple of the issues for us to have an information session. So,
And I can also, I don't have to wait for that. I can go see Dr. Adams.
Absolutely.
So I will do that, because, and I'm just expressing that, because that's something that I don't know when the information is, but that's the one that I need to carry the torch forward to our community.
And I feel like as a team, we've got to have things that we agree on. There is all of this political baggage surrounding the Common Core, and that's not my role to get involved in that. And so as a group, if there are things that we can agree on, as a superintendent's organization, as a school board organization, we have put forth an agenda that says, where's in support of the Common Core, we would like you to consider transitioning into it and giving it some more time. But, you know, I also feel like in our points that we're talking about, we want to all be agreeing that these are the most important points, because it's very complicated. We're not going to get in a two-hour session everything that we need to know about the Common Core, but we can, mm-hmm. I think we need to all agree on some points for our community. So I'm glad to sit with you and give you a little bit more background and what we've been doing, but I do have a, we should be speaking the same points.
I'll save it for the information.
And could I say one more thing? I'm sorry. Regarding the principals meeting, this is not political. This is very important to the principals. They are inviting parents. You're invited, but this is not a community meeting. This is sending information out to parents. We want parents to know as much as they can about what STEM means. What are the expectations in writing? What do we need to be looking at in math? So they want to have different sessions to inform parents, but it's not to get into the, you know, so we want to invite you as members, as parents, to sit in these sessions with the principals, but they were very adamant that they don't want to get into the political arena of Common Core.
I'm not going to talk about the Common Core stuff now, but in general, the comment about stuff we can all agree on, I don't want that to be misunderstood by anybody who pulls this tape and listens to it. It's about, we don't necessarily all agree on things, but we support what the board corporate agrees
exactly.
on. Because, and that's an important distinction,
exactly.
because if someone were to just hear this
yeah.
snippet and say, oh, they're going to sit around and agree on stuff, it might be misunderstood.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we agree to support what the board corporate
exactly.
is going to do. So.
And I'm part of that.
Right.
I don't want to be speaking something different than my board.
Right.
And that being said, if you can't support it, then you can either refer somebody or you can, and I think we've all experienced that. I think all of us have.
Yep.
You know, and you don't have to preface it with, well, I wasn't supportive of that.
Mm-hmm.
You can still be part of the team by saying, you know, well, for additional information, or if you have this information, you might want to check with X or you might want to, whatever it happens. Okay, Chairman Johnson. There's a request by CWA. You received a forward from Ms. Stang before our break. With the minutes of a meeting I had with Mr. Davis. The only thing I'm bringing forward is what I told him I would, which is a request to set up a regular monthly meeting with the board and the CWA executive board. From the minutes, I'm sure you got the information that he was under the impression that we were meeting regularly with the teachers union, with the IRCEA. I informed him that we, Ms. Disney and myself, and the board members at the time, we met one time with the CWA because it was, with the IRCEA, because it was established when we were elected. I have my own personal feelings, which I'll deal with later, but and when we get into discussion, but I explained to him that it was not a decision for the chairman to make, that I needed to bring it to the board. It was a departure from what we've done in the past. And I explained that there was no second meeting, that even though there were already two members who were on the board and had dealt with those monthly meetings, that the board, I believe it was unanimously, said they did not want to continue those meetings. There was one dissenter, and did not wish to continue those meetings, and the rationale for that. I am bringing it today for discussion, if you would like to discuss it, and the possibility of doing that. So let's talk about it a little bit.
What in the world would you talk about every month?
His comments were he wanted to bring, you know, issues and problems to the board. Miss DeGresta.
I apologize for imposing myself on your conversation. You have a collective bargaining agreement with the CWA unit, and there is a specific process for handling grievances. I recommend to you that you respect your collective bargaining agreement and you follow that process. If any union, and I'm not going to pick out one, if any union has a problem, a concern, they really have two options. They can sit with the chief negotiator from the union, from the district, either the superintendent or her chief negotiator, and have a conversation, or they can file a grievance. That's the process that was agreed upon in the collective bargaining agreement with the CWA, and I would recommend to you that you respect that process. If you want to change that process and make yourselves the recipient of all grievances from one or both unions, please negotiate that first. Have it agreed to in a collective bargaining agreement before you step into that process. With that said, it's your school district.
Ms. Disney.
Well, I was under the, you know, I was thinking when we first sat down with them that how wonderful to be all ears and open to a conversation, because you want to build relationships and you want to make sure the employees know that you care about the things that they care about. However, the conversation took just minutes to go into working conditions and compensation. So it really, right then and there, we were in trouble, you know, would have been in trouble had we had any further conversation with teachers. So that was what influenced me to say no about those meetings, because they were designed to sit down and really build relationships, but they didn't work out that way. That one meeting was right away, went into working conditions, like right off the bat. So that, you know, it's very difficult for people to talk during a negotiation. You're not supposed to be talking during a negotiation process about those items. And when you have conversations with teachers while you're in negotiations, very little else is said except for the things that are on everyone's mind, which is the negotiation issue. So, I still say no.
So can we look at this differently, and can we still have conversations with non-executive board personnel? Because I think one of the issues that we face as board members is that we are perceived as being very distant from the reality of the people whose life we impact with our decisions. And I know that we cannot talk with the union executive board at a time when there are negotiations. But I believe that there's nothing that prohibits us from talking to other non-union executive board staff. And when that has been done in the past, I had a meeting a few years ago in one of our schools during a time when there were a lot of issues, and I had a conversation with teachers, and I listened to teachers, and I asked them to submit questions if they had questions. I listened, and then I brought everything back and I shared that with the superintendent. And a lot of those teachers were just appreciative that somebody took the time to listen to their concerns. And I was very clear before I spoke with them that I was not there to answer, to tell them, you know, I was there to listen, because people feel like they're not listened to. And I think because we are so concerned about this coming back to haunt us, we live in a lot of fear, and that creates a very big chasm between the board and the people that we want to serve. We want to do what's best for our teachers, for our students, for our staff, so they can do the job that they need to do. But we're not very good at listening to them, except when it's a complaint and you're getting all these nasty emails, and that's not conducive to building relationships. Well, so, aside from executive session, does it mean we are prohibited from speaking to any employee of the school district?
Just a minute, Ms. Dean-Brest, if you would. Mm-hmm. The request is not if you can meet. The request is for the entire board to meet.
I know, but I'm just saying, because it seems like this has been tried and it's not working for the whole board, I'm saying, can you think of this in another context?
Okay,
and so I just had a follow-up to that.
Okay, my question is, are you talking about you meeting? Or are you talking about our entire board being, you want to find a venue for our entire board to meet with both of you?
It could be either. It doesn't have to be me. I'm just giving an example. Mm-hmm. I use that as a vehicle to share that we end up in these situations because there is no conversation. And it always becomes, if you have an issue, file a grievance. If you have an issue, complain. And I think before we go to complain and file a grievance, maybe there are channels to be proactive instead of it this harshness. So it could be the board corporate, which I doubt there would be interest, or it could be just board members knowing that they can have these conversations. And I wanted clarification because as one board member, I am not clear anymore about what that means when we say, you know, we're negotiating. So does that mean that we are prohibited from speaking to any employee that is touched by that contract? And I wanted clarification from Ms. DeAgresta.
This is that's a separate issue, and mm-hmm. I will ask her to answer that in just a minute.
Okay.
The request was for the board
mm-hmm.
to meet with the executive board, not for members of the union.
Right.
Or non-members of the
right.
union, or not the executive board.
Right.
The issue that I need to settle mm-hmm. is on meeting as a board with the executive board. But before we get into deciding how we're going to move forward as board corporate, on that particular request by the CWA, Ms. DeGresta is welcome to answer anything mm-hmm. regarding whether it's legal for us to meet
mm-hmm.
and what they precisely when we're in negotiations, for you as an individual board member, I hope I'm getting this right,
mm-hmm.
for you as
you
an
are.
Individual board member
mm-hmm.
to meet with members of the bargaining unit in which we are
mm-hmm.
In the middle of impasse or whatever it happens
mm-hmm.
to be. Ms. DeAgresta, I'm so sorry to have done that to you, but thank you very much for waiting.
Do you want me to answer Mrs. Jimenez's question?
Answer Mrs. Jimenez. Mrs. Jimenez wants to
know. I have a lot of questions.
Okay. Mrs. Jimenez's question, especially about meeting with members of the bargaining unit who are not on the executive board during the time of impasse, was one. And I think there were three questions altogether.
I'm going to take it in small bites. There is no legal prohibition for any individual school board member mm-hmm. to meet with any other non-school board elected official. Okay? I mean, that's like really broad. So you can meet with anybody that you want to meet with as long as it's not another elected school board member and you're in the sunshine. Okay? You can meet with any other employee of this district, an individual board member, whether or not they're a member of a union or inside a collective bargaining unit. Okay? The legal prohibition is we have collective bargaining agreements that say we recognize CWA as the bargaining entity for these white and blue collar workers. We recognize IRCEA as the unit that bargains for these instructional. So we have agreed by contract that we will go through those units in order to bargain with those employee units. If we step around it and we meet with 50 teachers somewhere else, an individual board member, in order to discuss salary, we have violated our own collective bargaining agreement. But if you meet with 50 teachers to talk about Common Core, you know, tell me about Common Core, tell me how you're doing the math standard in third grade, whatever that, you know, whatever question you have, that's not subject to negotiation. So, I mean, I feel like I'm dancing on the head of a pin. It depends upon what you're meeting about, what your conversation is about, but there is no legal prohibition for any board member to individually meet with anyone other than other elected school board members on your school board.
Ms. The rule of thumb I pretty much use is I ask them, you know, what they want to talk about, and if it's a complaint, I ask them, have they gone through the channels, the chain of command? I am not interested in anyone coming to me before they've spoken to the superintendent, because then if I go to the superintendent and she solves the problem, it looks as if I have usurped her authority, even if it's something she would have done in the first place. It looks as if I'm forcing the superintendent in some way to do something. So always I ask them, have they gone through the chain of command? If they have, but they still have something they want to air out, I will listen, but I won't tell them what I think about it. I want to ask the superintendent, then what don't I know? What's the other side of that story? No. So meeting with anybody from the district has to, you know, what do you want to talk about? If it's anything with negotiation, no, we can't talk. If it's something else, we can talk only if they've gone through the chain of command. So I find myself, you know, really having them qualify the conversation a little bit first, because I think that taking the authority away from the superintendent is one of the most damaging things that we can do in the district.
Well, here's where I might have more experience in this area than my present board, but probably since you have some years on the board, you do have experience with this. I have been paramilitary all my life. And we have a student handbook, we have an employee handbook, and we also have contracts. So for me, to answer your question, no, I would not want to meet with CWF. Our attorney makes a great point. I have, in my very short time, have experienced teachers with problems, as I can see you all were emailed. I answer every email, I answer every phone call, and I do go get back to the people. And I do try to humanize it, because I understand what you're trying to say. And then I also tell that teacher, because their chain of command also is their principal, please, you may have already discussed it with your principal, why don't you discuss it with your principal, and I will discuss it with Dr. Adams. And we have. Mm-hmm. And I usually facilitate. And so that I don't take away this is my direct chain of command for me. But I do want to be warm and friendly. I want them to know that I'm listening. And I do, as I said, answer every call, every email, and I've gotten so many in a very short time. But I do understand in collective bargaining, as we are, that nobody on that executive board, and luckily I haven't had anybody outside the executive board estimate with me on anything, nor would I want to, because that's a slippery slope. Because even though they're not on the executive, the negotiating team, I wouldn't want anything misconstrued. You know, it doesn't prohibit me from talking to a teacher on how I feel on the upcoming items. I wouldn't want them to know. Or I met with Ms. Simchek, and yes, I did meet with them, and then their perception of what our conversation is. I'm still open until the time we get to impasse. So I'm very clear on what's going on, and I do understand what you're saying, because I've been hit already quite heavily. But and I do feel and agree with you, Ms. Disney, that it's all going to come down to money and or complaint, which I see that transportation takes the lead in my short time as well. So I do feel that, to answer your question, I do not want to go down that route. And our attorney has cautioned us anyway, so I don't think that's a good position.
Okay, any other comments?
Okay. Ms. Simchek has made it clear she is not willing to meet individually with CWA. I think I read Ms. Disney as that. And Mr. Kane, thank you very much. I will make certain that I will get with Ms. Stang, and we will send a letter that the board, and that it was a board corporate decision. We don't poll the board, so once we have our three, we're fine. So,
can I just add, and I don't know if, I'm sure you're well versed in how to do that, but I do want to point out that tool that they have, that if, you know, not just coldly saying go to your contract and grieve it, but we feel that there's plenty of things in that you know, it's clearly spelled out in the contract that we have, that, you know, you can follow those steps, and anything about that, they can certainly bring it to the board after that.
And you need to remember that when Ms. Disney and I came on the board, those issues were part of the collective bargaining, mm-hmm. but those items were still being done. Those meetings were still taking place.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just that we had a collective bargaining agreement. It's that, you know, there
we
was
did both.
there was an interpretation that the teachers union could and did and had for several years met individually with the board. We actually, and I appreciate Ms. Disney's summation on that, but you know, we did try that with the NAACP, and that turned out to, it wasn't just grievances, it wasn't just problems they wanted to talk about, but there was every issue was anonymous. Every issue had, there was no, it was all of this information that was just thrown out on the table, but yet they would never say what school, they would never say what, and we met with them three different times on three different occasions, and we met during a celebratory time. I don't think it was Martin Luther King, but it was something else, and they actually brought in the lady who was the national head of the NAACP, who was a delightful person and a pleasure to speak with. But not only was she there, and it was being covered because she was at our meeting, but all of these anonymous accusations, again, were being made, and the press picked up on every single one of them, even though there was no collaboration, there was no discussion about, you know, what school things were taking place, no information about who had been contacted, who hadn't been contacted. It was all, you know, this person is afraid to go to school every day and teach. And those kinds of comments, or this person has been threatened by their principal, so they can't talk to their principal. And I applaud Ms. Disney. During that time, she was chairman, and I will tell you, she was extremely patient, much more so than your existing chairman has ever been known to be. She was, and she handled herself admirably, and I have great respect for that time. And then the board did take a position that we didn't feel, unless there was something specific, or if there was an agenda. We never had an agenda, because the NAACP had asked to set the agenda, and there was never an agenda except for the outline that Ms. Disney did. She made every effort for that. So, and I'm not saying we shouldn't be open to complaints and criticism. I mean, I always say, if I want to hear what's going on, I just go on a Saturday afternoon or whatever, or Sunday afternoon to Publix or Target, and you're going to get at least one coming down the aisles. You are. And it's good to hear. You know, I don't want to go around deluding myself that everything's all rosy, but you have to be receptive to that. And I would say probably 80% of the time people just want to vent. They're not really looking for an answer. They just want to vent. And I'm there. That's what I'm supposed to be there for. So, and I think I probably know one of the issues that Ms. Jimenez was talking about, and I did meet with a group of teachers regarding an issue at their school, and listened to what their concerns were, and there was probably about 50 of them there, but it was, they were not there to circumvent the negotiating process. This dealt with an issue at their school, and they had tried what they thought they had done. This was not under Dr. Mm-hmm. Adams' watch mm-hmm. that I'm talking about. And they had tried. They had done all the proper protocols. They were at their wit's end as to what they could do as a body, as an educational body at that particular school. And I think they did it. I think they handled it well. They didn't make a big deal out of anything. They were very quiet, very respectful, and they did not expect any answers. They just wanted somebody to listen, because they had gone all the way up the chain. So, and things turned out okay. Things turned out okay. So, but I think that any time I have, and I again with Mr. Davis, I did ask Ms. Stang to sit in extra work for her, and I appreciate that she was willing to do that. But I think it was important that there be a record of the request and a record of the complaints and a record of the comments. And I think it's important that this, and they were given to the superintendent. And I'm certainly not going to have a meeting like that and not share information with the superintendent. I've done that ever since she's been superintendent, and I did it with our former superintendent. I think it's really important
I actually gave her something today. All of us received a letter from Taxpayers Association. It did not. Dr. Adams did not get that letter.
Right.
Her name wasn't on it, so I made a copy of it, and I just took it into Ms. Poisel, and I said, Dr. Adams was not copied on this, and I think she needs to be aware of the position that's been taken. So she cannot function as our head of the educational part of this if we're not keeping her in the loop. And if we exclude her and our negotiating team by meeting individually on collective bargaining issues, then we've created our own problem. And we cannot blame that problem on anybody else if we make that exclusion. So people need to know what's going on with us, and they need to know. Staff, Dr. Adams needs to know so the staff can be aware of what concerns are. They're not going to go out looking for concerns. They need to know what the concerns are. So I feel that's my responsibility.
That was kind of a protocol, wasn't it, Mr. McCain? Would you like that?
Well, my ADD kicked in at the end of your speech.
Oh, please.
Mrs. Johnson, could I mention that I appreciate that this board is very good about getting information back to me, and I appreciate that, you know, in a readily manner, and that we do have a team that negotiates on your behalf, and it's important that they have you give them that authority to do that, you know, for you. So I appreciate that support.
Thank you, and thank you, Ms. Deep Reston. I appreciate that. Any other discussion on the request by CWA? And Ms. Stang, if you'll please make a note that we need to get together and do a letter to Mr. Davis, if you would, please. Okay, Ms. Jimenez.
Last item, graduation rates. I just put this up here because I actually had a conversation with Dr. Adams about this, and when we heard about the graduation rates, a lot of this information came through the media. And I was at a meeting where there was a lot of negativity about our graduation rates. And so my comment was just that when these types of issues, when this type of information is made available, I think it's good for the board to be proactive, for the school district to be proactive in getting the information out there, because one of the issues with the graduation rates was that the formula changed. And when these formulas change, usually you're not comparing apples to apples, but the community doesn't know that. So they look at those numbers and they, you know, show concern, which is normal. But I think if we could have ways of being the source of information to the community around these issues, because, you know, looking at individual high school graduation rates, you know, there is an area for concern and there's work to be done, and we have to acknowledge that too.
So what I handed out is to try and this was done in-house, to try and give the board some background information on the graduation rates and how they've changed. And so trying to simplify it, if you will, but it's still very complicated. And we don't know. We know the information about 8 hours or less before it goes public. So we don't get information ahead of time from the Department of Education. You know, they say, well, you've got until 11 o'clock and the information, you know, comes out. But this does give you some information to use with your constituency in terms of what is the graduation rate. If you remember, it's changed a couple of times over the last few years. We did have a Florida graduation rate, then we went to a governor's, and now it's a federal graduation rate, which now they look at it the same in every state. So now Florida can be compared to Massachusetts or Mississippi or California. Now, the federal rate is 2 years behind, so we don't know how we compare, even with last year's graduation rate, with the federal. They're still behind on putting that all together. But it does give you, if you choose to, you know, some basic information that you can take a look at, and then feel free to ask me. What tripped up Vero Beach High School this year on their grade, and I will spend a little time on that, is the second page, and that's the at-risk graduation rate. And so here the context tells you that in 2009-10, the state included graduation rates in high school grades. Prior to 2009-10, high school graduation rates were not even included in the high school grade. For the 9-10 and the 11-12, two rates were used, the overall graduation rate and the at-risk graduation rate. At-risk students are those students who enter ninth grade from the first time, eighth grade students who scored a level one or level two in reading and math, who come into the ninth grade. And they follow that cohort of students to see what percentage of them graduate in 4 years. Okay, so they are tracking those at-risk students who, again, scored at a level one or level two coming into ninth grade. So in their eighth grade FCAT, they scored a level one or level two on math and reading. And so at the end of that 4 years, you get an at-risk graduation rate that gives you the percentage of those students who graduated in 4 years. The cutoff is 65%. They are looking at 65% or more graduating in 4 years. If you do not meet that, your letter grade is lowered one. So what happened to Vero Beach High School is they did have 65% last year, and if you remember, Vero Beach High School was a grade of A. This year they earned enough points to have an A, but because their at-risk graduation rate was less than what they had last year, they fell a letter grade, okay? So the at-risk graduation rate is added to, not just graduation rate now, but an at-risk graduation rate is added to the formula in figuring out high school grades. So this just gives you a little bit of background information. That's changed a couple of times since they, what we know for sure is that something's going to change in the formula, but it's just good background information for you, and if anybody's really interested in it, you've got something there. And then the next page gives you the graduation rates over the last 3 years. The Department of Education online puts out a very nice handout on graduation rates, and I thought I brought a copy of it, but it shows graduation rates over the last 10 years in every single county. It shows it by ethnicity. It shows dropout rates for the last 10 years. It shows by ethnicity. It has a very nice breakdown to all of it. So that is, you can print that offline. That's what I do, is I'll just print that report and I'll put it in my file. This just capsulizes the federal four-year graduation rate for our three high schools compared to the state. There's also a five-year supplemental graduation rate. And what that means is that we do have a group of students that take 5 years to graduate and not four. So what that does is those students that came in ninth grade but didn't graduate in 4 years but did in five, they're added to that supplemental graduation rate. And that's what the five-year means. The same with the at-risk. You may have, in that at-risk population that you have, a percentage of them that graduated in 4 years, and then you will have some that will go graduate in that fifth year. So that five-year supplemental of at-risk is including those students who were at-risk, then that at-risk cohort who graduated in 5 years. So this is just a kind of a cheat sheet for you, if you will, to give you some additional information, and I'm glad to talk to you about it at any time. The fourth sheet on page four kind of gives you an idea of how they come up with the graduation rate. So let's use Vero Beach High School as an example. It looks like this. The original cohort of ninth graders 4 years ago at Vero Beach High School is 942 students. 226 left the district. They're not counted in the graduation rate. They left. One student deceased. 13 transferred to a private school, 8 went into home education, 54 went into the adult education program, 18 were W-45, which means they withdrew. So the adjusted cohort by which the graduation rate is determined is 694, because they take out those students that they don't count it against you if you have students that left the district. They do count it against you if you went into the adult ed program or you got a GED. None of those count anymore toward your graduation rate. But that, you know, if there was somebody that was deceased, left the district, transferred to a private school, went into adult or home education, they adjust the cohort, and then that cohort is used to determine the percentage of students that entered in ninth grade that graduated in ninth grade, or in 4 years later. So this is the handout. This is the data that we get from the state in determining how they decided that Vero Beach High School had 76.8% of their students graduate. Further, what we've done with this is now we are tracking in PM2 the eighth grade cohort. So we can track by student. The teacher can track by student. Guidance counselors can track by student much easier who that cohort group coming in. Further, they can look at the individual subgroups. One of the things that stood out with me at Vero Beach High School was the ESC population. They only had 51% of that population graduate in that 4 years. Now, when you look at the fifth-year supplement, it looks pretty good, but in that 4 years, so that's an area that they have already agreed that they must focus on, and so you do get a nice breakdown by subgroup on how your students are doing. And the other thing that schools are going to be working with us on is just doing a better job of monitoring the codes that you use, because what they found when it came back in is that some of the codes weren't correct. Well, they do the code when a student leaves, when a student, you know, so they're going to put in some better tracking measures for that. So,
Ms. Disney.
One of the things that I found when I would go speak at groups is that they would ask the graduation rate, mm-hmm. and they want to know the dropout rate. And they were surprised that it was not the inverse.
Exactly.
They're always surprised because our dropout rates in our high schools are less than 2%.
That's right.
So they would say, well, how come then your graduation rate is
90%? Yes, that is confusing.
And so whenever you're asked the graduation rate, I recommend that you offer the dropout rate, mm-hmm. because then it provokes the question, well, what are all the other students? You know, why... Yeah. Who are the other 12 or 15% or whatever? And it gives you the opportunity to explain that not every student is able to get a standard diploma, because that's what is counting.
Yeah.
So to be able to talk about that, mm-hmm. well, there's the student that has to go to work, so they have to go to night school, and that's mm-hmm. now they're in adult ed, so they're not counted. And there's the student who needed to get the GED because of whatever other reason. And that changes the conversation quite a bit.
The interesting thing about our graduation rate is there are only, this year, there were out of the 67 counties, there were 11 counties that scored higher than we did. We're usually in the top 10 in graduation rate in Florida. Doesn't mean we don't want to improve, don't get me wrong. But when you look at overall, when you look at the top performing counties in the state, Indian River is usually in the top 10, you know. And we fell out of that because when you look, Vero Beach High School had a big drop. You know, they did have a significant, so that's something that, you know, they were devastated by. Mm-hmm. So they're taking a very close, you know, look at all of that. But when you compare us by county, the graduation rate and the dropout rate are usually in the top 10%. Not 10%, the top 10.
Do you have any idea why we are so successful in graduating our migrant students at Sebastian River High School? It is, I mean, the percentage is so much higher than anywhere else.
Yeah. And when you look at, when you go to graduation at Sebastian River High School, it's a very, you have a very large population now of Hispanic students. I feel a lot of it is that culture and relationship. They have a lot of, they have actually a person on the campus that works directly, you know, with those students mm-hmm. and families, and I think that is a carryover from the middle to the high. It's getting from the middle to the high, I mean, compared to 20 years ago when I opened a school to what it is today in terms of graduation rate of those students, it's phenomenal.
It is. Any other comments?
Thank you very much. Thank you. Ms. Disney?
That's it for me.
Ms. Simcheck?
That's it for me.
Can't see, turn it in. Okay.
Oh, you were done.
No, I never said I was done.
She was done until
I'm done.
You said she was done.
Okay. I've had a conversation with Mr. O'Brien regarding his letter that he sent. And the letter is regarding the quarterly report of the County Commission's Indian River County Traffic Education Program Trust Fund. And Dr. Adams and I have talked about this at one point, and Mr. O'Brien is looking for a commitment. He wants a written commitment from us as to whether we want to take part of this. He never answered me when I asked him. St. Edward's Schools last 3 years has averaged $9,641, and since the fund is only $14,000, I asked him, so we only get $5,000? And he said, well, you haven't used it for several years. He said, so St. Edward's did apply for that. And I said, so if we want to apply for that, then would we get the whole trust fund again? And I didn't get any answers, because he, like me, as chairman, he can't speak for his board because he doesn't know what the board would do if indeed that was the request. So I'm going to give you just a second, and I apologize for not getting this to you sooner, but it came literally when we were on break. So, and I did call him, and I made certain that he understood that I could not make that decision, that I'd have to wait for this.
And I really need to speak to the background.
I know you do.
Okay.
Please go ahead.
Well, first of all, with regard to St. Ed's, they used to attend our summer program. So we would use those dollars for, we used to use the dollars for summer driver education, and we also used the dollars for, to pay substitutes at Sebastian River High School, because they had one driver education teacher, and so when you took kids on the road, you'd have to have somebody in the classroom, okay? If you remember, in one of the budget cut years, we cut driver education out of the program. So we cut all the cars that we had at both schools, the teachers, so at, you know, $57,000 per teacher, and the range. We no longer have a driving range. I mean, it was really a program that we, you know, so it's several hundred thousand dollars that would be to revive that program. And our students do have the opportunity to take it virtually now online at no cost. Okay, so I've been asked several times over the years about driver education. This is not the first time, and with the understanding, you know, we do have these dollars that can help, but the dollars that we appreciated over the years really supported the summer program. We were able to pay teachers in the summertime from our high schools to teach it, and St. Ed's students were able to take advantage of that program at that time. So it's not enough dollars to recreate a program. Mm-hmm.
It's a question. It's a budgetary question.
It is.
You know, that when you get ready to do the budget next year, all right, where are you going to come up with a couple hundred grand? What are you going to cut out?
Yeah.
I mean, mm-hmm. You want to get rid of all your ESE aides? Probably not. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to get rid of elementary specials? Probably not. But that's what you're going to be facing. You're going to be facing one of those questions, because the fund, I mean, yeah, do we want, I mean, I'm going to speak for all five people sitting here. Would we love to have a driver's education? Absolutely, we're interested
sure.
in driver's education. Absolutely,
sure.
We want it. Mm-hmm. Give us $250,000 and we'll be happy to do it. If not, we're going to find $250,000 somewhere else. And that's what it's come down to. I mean, it's really a budget issue.
It is.
Not a desire issue.
No, not at all.
Gosh, he just sits there and says nothing, and then he just is
brilliant.
He's brilliant,
right?
It's great.
Isn't it?
It's
over. Waitresses.
See you next month.
No, I was just going to say ditto. I think it's interesting that, you know, when we look at safety, it's our teen drivers
right.
that are, you know, the at most risk. And just the thought of kids learning how to drive virtually is a scary thought to me. They do that every time. But I think Matt makes an excellent point, and I mean, it's the ongoing point in education. We are expected to educate the children and do a lot of other things.
And as much as we would all love to offer this, we just don't have the funds. And I don't think that, you know, we could cut any existing mm-hmm. programs to provide this. Not that it's not important, but we just
right.
can't keep being asked to do everything. We just
any other comments?
Comically, I'd say, too bad we can't waver in and piggyback off of St. Ed's and send our kids there.
For some reason, it has never quite worked that way.
No, I know.
I just needed the board's direction, mm-hmm. and I think unanimous direction is, we may even quote Mr. McCain in the letter.
Here.
All right. Anything else? Anything else any board member has? All right, Dr. Adams.
Okay. I'd like to share a calendar with you to see if you're interested in.
So I have two.
I know, but she gets the line. She usually gets the line. If we stay, it's because she has some clout, I would say.
So we talked a little bit about the calendar before, and it was after Veterans Day, and I had mentioned that the calendar committee had some suggestions, and you came up with some suggestions yourselves that actually the calendar committee used with regard to the calendar and Veterans Day. And before I go into the calendar, I would like you to know that I sent a letter to Colonel Zickert, okay, and I told him, you know, that we've appreciated their support over the years, that we knew there was a concern this year, but we look at it every year. They had even mentioned to me, it's a floating holiday, and when it's a floating holiday, it means it's on a different day every year, and that we have to take the community and the parents into consideration, but we will look at it every year. And, you know, and I included all the activities that we had done at the schools. So, having said that, the calendar differences, if you will, for next year would be, if you look at Thursday, September 25th, and Friday, September 26th, you'll see that that's a half day in service, and then Friday is an emergency day. You know, we usually have an emergency day, first semester and second semester, that we build in case we have a hurricane, and this is early. This would allow us to have the students home so this would work for Rosh Hashanah. Students would go home early on Thursday to be home for the evening and would actually have Friday off. So it just works. That was going to be an in-service day on Friday anyhow, so we used our emergency day, one of our emergency days, for that. So that's a change in the calendar, the in-service day and then the emergency day, which where there would be no school. Okay? The second difference is built around Veterans Day. And you'll notice that on Thursday, November 6th, that's conference night, which that's typically when we have that long night where teachers stay and meet with parents, and then they would normally have Friday off. And one of the things that you suggested, because we had a different idea, is how about if we have Monday off instead of Friday, and Veterans Day is on Tuesday next year, so we could have a Monday no school, and it's Tuesday,
yeah.
And then Tuesday Veterans Day off, so it doesn't make it a singleton. Okay, so those two are really the changes, I would say, in the calendar of trying to accommodate when we can. And the rest of it looks pretty much like you would see in terms of report cards and end of the semesters and in-service days. And the only change would be if we decided to change a calendar in any way with regards to staff development.
Board member comments? Yes, Ms. Menes.
Can you tell us about the day off after Martin Luther King Day?
The day
Monday,
off after
Tuesday,
Martin Luther King
Tuesday,
Day.
Tuesday, 1:20, half teacher work day, half teacher in service day, no school for students. So there's, it says Monday and a Tuesday off for students. That is a change.
I don't know. Evidently, it's put in a different place. They have it, and it must have been in that time frame. And maybe it was a Friday, Monday, and now it's Monday, Tuesday. I don't know. I'll check on that for you. Okay.
Just
sorry.
You have any comments?
No, I'm just looking at these, especially in January, because we've come in from a from our winter break, and then they prepare for exams. So there's a lot of time lost there in terms of any teaching going on, and then they leave again. And then in February we have another 4-day. We have a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday also. So it's just it seems like it's all crunched together as opposed to spreading out these days off.
Would that be for grading the final?
Yes, that's my question is in that kind of
it is.
You know, sort of with the questions they've had already, the days off for the conference for the in services are Fridays, making long weekends. There's a lot of long weekends, and we had had talked about absenteeism teachers on Fridays and Mondays.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering is this setting us up for teachers missing that in-service if we're making these long weekends?
Well, actually, those Fridays, it's mandatory, no comp time. I mean, that was really suggested by the union.
Yeah.
So they pay pretty close attention to that because they were pretty sensitive to you giving them that time. We did do a teacher absentee report at the end of last year. And I can't really say that Friday and Mondays jumped out as much as or pretty high
they
numbers
have.
Just throughout, you know.
You said, Jeff, did you have a...
But we can look at that.
I just observed that and thought that it was for grading those final exams.
I think it probably is, Mrs. Simchek. And when you look at you have your three final exams, you have your early release for final exams, and then your report cards that are distributed the following week.
No, that wasn't my question. We've always had those for as long as I can remember. We've had those half days. I'm talking about the when you have Tuesday the 20th, January 20th, right after Martin Luther King, you know, as an in-service day, there's already been 3 days off. Now that becomes that if that's an in-service day. I was just wondering if we're going to see a lot of call-ins for the in-services, you know. No shows, since it's a long weekend, and it happens in the fall as well. So that's all I was worried.
Yeah.
That's what I was worried about.
But I get it.
If the union has already identified that as a potential problem and put some stopgaps in place, I guess we just have to see.
I think they are trying to work with us on those in-service days. I really do, and we'll continue to work with them and encourage ask them to encourage that. But I think that does happen. Don't get me wrong. I think that it happens for students and it happens for teachers too.
Is there a report for this last academic year?
Yes.
In terms of could we? I don't know if the previous report is already in our online site, but it would be interesting to see last year's the two last years and see what that looks like.
Because
I know, there was some absenteeism before Thanksgiving, or you know, movies and stuff like that again. And I just think that, you know, whatever we do, the time before is always going to be a temptation. But at some point, there has to be some accountability because it's seat time that's being lost for those students.
And I always hear about one or two.
Right.
I mean, I'll hear it. I just heard it this last time about somebody told me that somebody said, well, don't even come because we're not going to do anything. It's like,
yes.
Who, where, what, and when.
It's an ongoing.
For some reason, I think, and maybe I dreamt this, made it up myself. For some reason, it seemed like, especially like around Thanksgiving, you know, you had that, because one time we just had Thursday, Friday. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Right.
And I think those days, like when we just had Thursday, Friday, that Wednesday before was a real problem.
It was.
And even when we had Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I think the Tuesday before was a real problem.
It happens.
But I don't, for some reason, I think because we've made it a whole week, we don't
see so much the Friday before.
Friday the Friday before because there's a whole week. Because the problem always was people wanted to go away for family at Thanksgiving.
Right.
And if you only had Thursday Friday off, well,
you can't go unless you take
Friday off, you know. And same thing with Tuesday. But I think that was alleviated somewhat with having the full week at Thanksgiving. I may be dreaming that.
Mm-hmm. You are.
No, I agree.
Yeah. No, I think that's why we need to see the numbers. Yeah. Because I think
we're doing it more
regularly. Maybe it's a precinct dream and he's going to predict the data, but that's why we want to look at the data. Anyway,
I think the board, Dr. Adams, would very much like maybe you could bring that information to the next discussion session next month if you would, as a follow up. I
might send it out to you too have a chance to look at it. And I'll tell you why, because we'd like to get you to get the calendar approved at some point. And it doesn't mean we can't have any changes, but you know, we want to keep this moving along.
Well, we often know that for families, that you know, when we start the new year, families start planning vacations and other things.
They do.
I think, in fairness to our families, which means impact on our students. Mm-hmm. That we need to get this approved as soon as possible. Okay. So if you could just get that information, then we could have an opportunity to speak with you individually, and then I would say you probably want to get this on the calendar. But and you're going to find out about the January 20th, this half-day teacher work day, half-day teacher.
Yeah, where was that before in terms of, was it attached to another day, or was it a Friday, Monday instead of a Monday, Tuesday? The teacher half-day... Oh, it couldn't be on a Friday now because it was final exam day.
Yeah.
But that really wasn't your question anyhow.
No, it was just, I was just concerned. Because here's the way the conversation goes when we're talking about time off. It's not, oh, great, we have the whole week of Thanksgiving off, so I don't need to take any days off. It is, oh, we've got 5 days off, so now I only need to, you know, I can still take one or two days of vacation, and now I've got 14 days. Mm-hmm. You know, so it is how many days off do I need to use, not how many days are they giving me, sort of thing. Yeah, that's where it is.
Any other comments on that?
Okay,
so you have direction on that?
I do.
All right, thank you very much. I don't think we have... Oh, I'm so sorry. Go ahead.
I was thinking about this and I didn't articulate it. I know that we never know in advance what the testing is going to be like.
Right.
So this is just our best guess.
We know a window, but we don't have the... Yeah. We don't know, have our own test dates, you know, secured yet. Yeah.
Ms. Menes, you have your calendar there. Would you look at the board calendar, please, for the first meeting and, February. See if we have anything that morning. I think that's the day, Dr. Adams, that you and I talked about for the information session. Was the first meeting in February, is that correct?
No. I thought we were talking about January 28th.
Oh.
Tuesday, January
28th. Oh, okay. I can't get on the internet.
Sorry.
We start at the 28th is available.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to do the morning of the 28th, then, if that works for everybody. We'll start at 9:30. And what do we have? Student support services. What is our next meeting that day?
We don't have one. That's an off Tuesday now because we're having the first and the third.
The 28th. So
we can go from 9:30 to 2:30. We will have lunch
there,
as we have done before. You're shaking your head.
For some reason, I'm thinking that there are board members absent during that period of time because we didn't schedule the union impasse hearing until later that week. But I don't remember somebody's schedule.
I have that calendar open.
That's the one that I think that has board member not available.
Okay, well, I'm back. I'm back from North Carolina. Well, we don't put names.
Well, I don't mind my name being up there. It doesn't bother me.
There we go. I got it open.
Do you
still have any classes
on?
I go to Washington the end of the week.
No, you can't be going the end of the week because we have the...
Not the 30th.
The 30th is a Thursday. And
no, I go on the 31st.
Yeah. Well, okay.
You don't have anything on the 28th?
The 28th, no.
Okay.
I don't have anything. Okay.
So 9:30. 9:30
to 2:30. We will have lunch, and we will, you know, we are going to have that'll be full. I
will
guarantee you, it will be a very full session.
So 9 to 2:30.
9:30 to 2:30. 9:30 to 2:30. Okay. And so we need lots of Diet Coke for this conference. Okay. All right. So we will set that up. If you would, Ms. Stang, you and I and Dr. Adams need to get together about advertising. We will talk about that later. But we also are hoping to have some information from Mr. Donadio. That's the reason why we canceled today. If we can't make that, we're not going to advertise this yet, but please put it tentative, and as soon as we know that we can have it, we will advertise it appropriately. We don't want it to be out there again before necessary. So please don't anybody put it on anything official, because it is not official until we know that Mr. Donadio is available. That's one of the focuses of that information session. Okay? Okay.
We're going to go to the support services.
Okay, having no other business coming before us, see everybody back here for our school board meeting at 6 o'clock. Meeting adjourned.